Hello, you are listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grant County and surrounding area. I'm Candace Burke, your weekly host. Today I'm joined by Nina Burley. Nina is a notable journalist and author who is here in Silver City to present two talks at Western New Mexico University. The first will be held at Light Hall on October 27th at 7 p.m. and the second one on November 2nd at 7 p.m. at the university's Global Resource Center. Welcome to Community Spotlight, Nina.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, it's a joy having you here. And I hope our listeners can learn so much about you because you have led a very fascinating life.
I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're having fun. Nina, before you talk to us about your upcoming presentation, tell us all about your brilliant career as an investigative journalist and an author.
Well, I got my start in Springfield, Illinois. I'm a Midwesterner. And I started out covering state politics in the 80s after I graduated college with an English degree. And I really got into it because I was told that I could make money doing it. I just graduated and, you know, English degrees even then were not lucrative paths. And so I got into it. I love to write. And I fell in love with the scent of the corruption, the blood of corruption and being the bloodhound on the trail of political and other people who were taking from the rich or taking from the poor and keeping for the rich. And, my interest and really my motivation has always been, justice, equality, gender equality, and speaking truth to power. And journalism has been a way to do that. It's also been, so I went on to Washington, to Chicago, and then Washington, and then New York, and then I lived in Paris and Italy. And there came a point where I was also able to just follow my curiosity about other things. I have broad interests. I'm interested in the law, obviously, because of my interest in justice and equality. I'm interested in the law. I'm interested in human psychology up to a certain point, although I never studied psychology, and I'm interested in history. So some of my books are about historical characters, historical science adventurers, and a couple of my books are about quirky crime stories. And then my last book was during the pandemic, publisher of Seven Stories Press called and asked if I would write a fast book about the race to the vaccine. It was late 2020 and everybody was still COVID lockdown. The election had just happened and the vaccine was about to be emergency authorized. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. I'm quite interested in science. I'm not a genetic expert, but I can hire an assistant, which I did. And I said, I'll do it, but you have to let me write a chapter about how the pandemic policy by the federal government was bought, really mishandled. And then, why that was and how that was. And also a chapter on the, at that time, crazy conspiracy theories that were erupting about the vaccine and about COVID. So he said yes, the publisher, and I went forward and wrote the thing in 3 months that he had asked me to do. It's a short book called Virus. And then he asked me to update it this year. And so I have a new chapter that expands on the weaponization of those conspiracy theories for political ends. And that book is out newly in paperback. And that's one of the subjects that I'll be covering in one of the talks I'll be giving, the misinformation and disinformation campaigns. That talk will be on November 2nd. My first talk will just be about, the changes in journalism over my career and how we got to the situation where we are at with people living in information silos.
What are the biggest changes you have seen in journalism?
Well, obviously, the biggest change is the shift from paper to digital. My career spans those eras. I was in the middle of it. We saw the devaluing of newspapers, the devaluing of writing. For a long time, you could pretty much make a living at it, get book contracts, and you got pretty good money for magazine articles when I was freelancing. And then it became more difficult because the internet came along, and two things, I guess, were happening. One was the absence, the loss of classified advertising, and all of these companies scrambling to figure out how, the financial model to keep it going. And they still haven't figured it out. I mean, some of the big companies, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and so on, I mean, they're backed with company funds, and they have the reach, so they can actually get, money to survive on. But all of these little papers that used to cover, let's say, the local dog catcher and the local city council, and even the state house in Illinois, where there's a lot of chicanery going on, and you wanted people in those committee rooms, those places have lost. They're gone. They are gone. I don't know how they'll come back. And if you don't have somebody watching the till and watching these people, the public good is not assured. So that's one of the big changes. And then of course the other is the proliferation or growth of social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Then now you have these other, these other platforms that are separated off from the mainstream, like Parler and Getter and the Trump Social, which I think is a failed operation. But you have these information silos now, or at Alex Jones, let's say Newsmax, or OANN, One America News Network, and Fox News. And then you have, the standard, the old school, CBS and NBC and ABC, and then you've got CNN, video, spewing video, but they're in competition with, let's say, YouTube and DIY news gatherers. And the DIY news gatherers have, millions of followers here and there. And the people who follow them, or who follow, let's say you're on Facebook and you're just getting news updates from your friends, and algorithms are pushing, inflammatory material around to get more eyeballs, because that's how platforms, these social medias, make money. So what's happened is you have these info silos, and then they reverberate with bullshit, excuse my language. And that bullshit is very much, it takes a lot longer to sort it out and correct it than it does to spew it and make it up. So that's the big problem. And that's one of the problems with our, political system now, is that you've got these people siloed off. They don't trust anything except for what they choose to believe in. Facts are malleable. History is malleable. This is a direct result of DIY publishing, social media not being regulated. And I always tell people, and I'll tell people this again at the talk, the sine qua non of journalism, or of fact-based information sources, is that they are running corrections. So when you see that somebody made a mistake, like CNN, they aired something. I'm just using that as an example, because they fired some people within the last 6 months over something. When you see that happening, that's when you can know that that's the source that actually is producing information that is viable. If you've never seen anything like that coming out of your feed, then you pretty much know that there's something wrong with the source. And I say this about, the conservative papers like the Wall Street Journal will run corrections if their reporters say something that's not accurate. Or if they discover later that it's not accurate, and people aren't doing this on purpose. I mean, I've made mistakes and had to correct them. You don't do them on purpose. Yeah. It's like your worst nightmare. But if you see a correction, you know that that operation is trying to be fact-based. If you never see them correct anything, and let's say, for example, Fox News right now is being sued by these election machine companies, an election machine company, about whom they reported totally unsubstantiated stories about their connections, I think, to Venezuela or Chinese or something. I can't remember the facts, but you can look it up. So lawsuit against, and it's billions, it's a multi-billion dollar lawsuit. And you don't see them, you didn't see them running corrections on that. But what you did see was now they pulled back a little bit, and it's because they're threatened with, you know, a large loss of money. And it'll be interesting to see how these things grind through the legal system. But most of the time, there is no correction. Fox News will say things about COVID being a hoax, or it's no worse than the flu. And those words are running on chyrons, the words that run under the pictures. And so anybody in America who looks up at a bar, in a bar or a restaurant where Fox News is running, will see these chyrons and, you know, all Democrats are communists. I mean, they'll put that, they'll literally put those words on the screen, and those are going into millions and millions of eyeballs. It's the most watched cable news network in the country. So that's one of the big silos, and it's not fact-based, and we know it's not fact-based. Even it operates as an entertainment company, even though it calls itself Fox News. So those are some of the big changes. I've given you a very long answer to your question.
No, this is all, you know, just so interesting that you're sharing this, because as you said, with the rise of Fox News, social media, we're also getting, you know, everyone's now, you know, just inundated with all of this, that they, yeah. it's easy to see how someone who doesn't use critical thinking a lot could easily get swept up by this tide of, you know, misinformation, disinformation that goes on.
And yeah, I mean, I would say that the one thing I'm hopeful about is that the people who are most easily duped by this are older people. They're not the digital generation. My kids have a keen eye for what my son calls sketchy websites, and they really, really don't fall for this stuff as much as the older folks do.
Yes, I think you're right. I think younger people are much more savvy. They can, they can discern what's, just wackadoodle, so to speak. Whereas as an older adult, I think it's a little more daunting to sift through what's true and what's not.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really good point that you're making. Mm-hmm. And then in your work as a journalist, just seeing what's going on with white nationalism and conspiracy theories, how do you cope with that as both a journalist and as a woman experiencing all this?
Yeah, I mean, it's not fun, obviously. It's disheartening. And it can be demoralizing. I mean, in the beginning of the Trump administration, when he started calling all the mainstream media fake news, that becomes a problem when, you work really hard and you have to fact check your work, and fact checking takes many, many days sometimes, and it's arduous and time consuming. And then at one point I realized, wow, there, all this fact checking that I'm doing, it's actually not, half the country has been persuaded that I'm just making it up. And so that's demoralizing. As far as like personal attacks and so on, I mean, women journalists, we all get the C word emails and anonymous stuff when you write something that they don't, these guys don't like, but I've never been personally harassed in person. And I don't walk around in fear. I guess, you know, it's not, I'm the least of their worries, or one of the lesser of their worries or concerns of these people, I think. But, you know, I do think about what will happen if after midterms or, you know, 2024, if they manage to put this dictatorship in, which is what it is they're looking to do.
The good way of putting it, Nina, it's a dictatorship.
You saw yesterday, it's on Twitter, a clip of Trump saying basically, you know, he looked forward to the day when reporters who reported leaks were thrown in jail and made to be brides of prisoners. In other words, hoping that they would get raped. And he basically said that in front of a group of, you know, his rally. And every once in a while, I think about it. And I look at some of these really high profile journalists who confronted him, like Costa at CNN, or I can't think of others, but some people who've been really brave in standing up to him on camera, on TV, because of course TV is where he doesn't like, they don't, that, you know, that's where they get a lot of their attention, and you know, he's concerned about that, the reach of video. And I do sometimes wonder, like, wow, you know, in the dictatorship that they want to set up, are they going to round those people up and put them in, you know, in prison? And I never thought I would be thinking that way or talking that way in this country. And what's so disturbing about it, well, of many reasons, but one of the things that's so disturbing is that this is actually how they would talk in like 2014 and 2016. And I met people, and I'm going to talk about this at my talk, which is one of the earliest signs that something was really amiss in the information world, was meeting these people who were Trump supporters at the Cleveland Republican convention where he was nominated in 16. And for the first time meeting people who were utterly convinced that Obama was going to cancel the election, call for martial law, and throw Christians in FEMA camps. They were utterly convinced of this and had made life choices based on it. And, if you drove around the country that there was this world of like right-wing radio that you could pick up, you know, if you're driving between Omaha and Lubbock, Texas or something, or, you know, you're out there in the night and you're listening to these radio voices and they're just spewing this crap. And especially, you know, it's promoting this Christian paranoia, and white Christian paranoia is just so outrageous when you consider if the fact is that white Christians are the most protected people in the history of humanity. I'm not kidding. I mean, white Christians have the nuclear weaponry and the white Christian nationalist, you know, supporters who are work in, you know, Colorado Springs and places like that, and have, you know, are in the military, and our military, our U.S. military is, you know, we have not been attacked recently, and they're, you know, despite 9/11, the country is not infested with terrorists from abroad. What we now know is that the terrorists that are here are ones that were born here and who actually are white supremacists and who are, again, infected with this this sense of, you know, paranoia, insecurity. Brown people are coming to take our stuff. Brown people are coming to take our jobs. There was a brown president. We're being disappeared. We're being replaced. All that Nazi ideology and paranoia is, you know, they're the danger.
I could not agree with you more, and I appreciate so much that you're sharing this with our listeners, because whoever thought in our lifetime we would see, you know, the rise of dictatorship and white supremacy the way we're experiencing it. So I think it's so important you're out here talking about it.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you think that. I hope people, it's obvious to me, but I don't know if people who aren't paying close attention to political junkies are as aware of this. But it is really important. And, you know, to make, you know, you're coming up on a midterm election here. I know New Mexico is blue, so it's really not going to make much difference, I guess, here. But in some of these states where people are making decisions based on, you know, what the gas price is, as opposed to what the future is, if these people take wrench control of the system. And if you understand even the minimal amount of history of Nazi Germany, for example, and it's true in other places, in Argentina and places like that, although those were coups, in these right-wing, you know, autocrats use democracy to seize power and destroy it. And that's actually what's going to happen here, because they don't believe in election. They don't believe in elections. They don't think that elections work. And you know what? Maybe they don't, because if you think about who's voting and how uneducated they are, or how badly misinformed they are, then maybe it doesn't work, because, you know, the educated population is the key to working democracy. And if you don't have people who are educated and know how to think critically, but if you have people who believe Bill Gates puts microchips into vaccine needles, which, by the way, that's engineering does not exist to make microchips that small, or, you know, who believe that Obama was going to throw them into FEMA camps, or, you know, that the border is being invaded by hordes of rapists, then they those people vote. And that's not good for the rest of us.
I could not agree with you more. Now, as we're wrapping up our interview today, I want to hear more about your two talks.
Okay, sure. So the first talk is going to be just some war stories about the front lines of what we've just been talking about. So I'm going to talk about the night that Trump got elected and my adventures in that evening. And I'm going to talk about some of the adventures I had earlier covering Trump in the Trump rise in Cleveland, especially. And then we're going to have that will all be in service of having a conversation about what is the purpose of journalism, what are facts, and how to distinguish facts. So some of that is stuff we've already talked about here, but I'll go more deeply into it. And then the second talk will be really drilling down more into the ways that information has been weaponized, disinformation for chaos purposes. And I'll specifically go into the research that I did and some of the insights that are in my book, Virus, the updated version of which will be on sale, I hope, at that event. And if not, I'll tell you how you can get copies of it. But it's a very short book, and I go very deeply into the way that disinformation and conspiracy theories about COVID and the vaccine were sourced and then kept alive by people who had who saw them as ways to maintain political power or sow enough chaos to really damage the effort of the Biden administration to try to put things to right after the 4 years of carnage and wreckage of the Trump administration.
Well, that the first talk is going to be on October 27th. That's this Thursday.
Yep.
7 p.m. And that's going to be at Light Hall, listeners. That's at Western University. So and then the second one on November 2nd will be at the Global Resource Center. And that's going to be on a Wednesday night, right, Nina?
November 2nd. Yeah.
So I hope, like you said to me before we start recording, bring your pets and menagerie.
Please come,
because we are just so grateful we have someone of your note and brilliance to share all this with our community.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
It's and I'm hoping also we were talking. Hopefully, I can have Nina back on next week for a lengthier interview.
I would love that. Happy to do it.
And I understand it's Southwest Word Print that's going to be sponsoring the second.
Yeah. I've been here for 6 weeks for Western New Mexico University. as a like writer in residence. And so they're sponsoring the first one. And then the second one is Southwest Word Fiesta.
And it was wonderful to hear how much you love silver, too.
It's great here.
Well, we are honored that you're here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks again, Nina. And hopefully we'll catch up with some more talk next week.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. It will also be available online at gmcr.org. You have been listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. I'm Candace Burke. Be well and happy.